And we are talking this segment about World Water Day, which is this Sunday, the 22nd of March. And we are here at the table in the cafe with Water Engineers for the Americas, also known as WEFTA. I'd like to welcome Elise Arena, who is Executive Director of that organization, Lou Harrington, who is a landscape architect and also very active with WEFTA, and Peter Fant, who is an engineer. He's president of the board of WEFTA, and he is also president and CEO of Souder Miller, which is an engineering firm here in Santa Fe. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning. So let's talk about WEFTA. What is this organization, Elise, and how did it get started?
I just joined WEFTA in September of 2014 and learned that we've had this organization based here in Santa Fe for over 12 years. They have 60 projects to show for their time, and we've helped over 20,000 people. What is WEFTA? It's an organization of volunteer engineers, geologists, planners, who go down to rural regions of Latin America to help communities that have requested their help in setting up clean water systems and sanitation systems. The work is funded through donations, private donations, and grant money. The engineers themselves will take their vacation time and buy their own airplane tickets often to go down and spend a couple of weeks at a time on projects. I found the organization to be unique as well because we have what we call circuit riders in the field who live in countries like Honduras and will go back and visit the projects we've worked on to make sure that the water systems are still functioning, and also to spread the word of the kind of work we do so that other communities can ask for their help. Any project that WEFTA works on requires that the community pitch in, and that may mean digging the ditches while the WEFTA engineers provide the technical support. We sometimes get donations of material and equipment. Last year, we were able to send a drilling rig down to Bolivia, which made a very big difference for their efforts to dig wells for the community.
What are some of the problems in Latin America that you're addressing and that people are asking for help with? I mean, we know that clean water or lack thereof is really a worldwide problem and leads to disease. And it's such a huge problem. Kids getting sick through sewage and stuff like that is not a pretty sight, but it's so common.
It is very common, and in many communities, there's a water source, but the water source may be miles away, and so mostly the women in the household have to spend a good deal of their time walking to retrieve the water, bringing it close to home for use. The water may come from a source that is not protected, so animals go in and out of the water, and there's bacteria in it and other contaminants.
And that's what they're drinking and
cooking with.
And
that's what they're using to drink. Even when they know it's contaminated, they don't actually have an option.
And I think this whole operation was really started because of Lou's work down with Habitat for Humanity. Because when he was doing that, Habitat has a focus on the houses, and they don't take care of the water systems, at least not initially. And I think that's where he started to see it. And then working with myself up here and some other, we started realizing that we had the capacity to go down and figure out some of the solutions to some of their water supply problems.
Yeah, I suppose that's really where it got started, the idea of WEFTA. Both Pete and I were involved with another nonprofit called Waterlines, which really is limited in the types of projects that it could be involved in. So what we did is we created this other organization, WEFTA, a sister nonprofit that could then dedicate all of our efforts to Latin America region and allow Waterlines then to concentrate on their work in Africa and Asia, where the need is evident. Everybody knows that the need for access to safe water and proper sanitation in Africa is a tremendously huge problem, whereas in Latin America, instead of the great majority of the living without access to proper water sources and sanitation, maybe they estimate 15% of the population in Latin America that lacks it. So we've been able to concentrate on on that, helping communities find good, safe, reliable water sources, developing those, and then conveyance systems that brings the water. As Elise mentioned, many times it's the women and children that take the brunt of that chore of hauling water from these already very compromised water sources and unreliable and unsafe, and then they haul those in buckets on their shoulders or however back to the communities. With our assistance, we're able to help with developing the water sources at clean springs and then bringing the water to the community to typically tap stands within the community, sometimes at each home, and then the families have access to safe, reliable water sources right there in their villages.
So some of the projects we originally started on were in Panama, and where we had to, first off, we'd be invited into the communities, then we'd hike back. Sometimes it would take 4 hours or 10 hours to get to some of the communities. We'd stay there, and they'd then show us their water supplies. And needless to say, we were bringing our iodine tablets to make sure we didn't, until we were sure where the water was coming from, we weren't exactly drinking it there. But some of the water supplies were, as Elise mentioned, you'd go down and you couldn't believe that that's really where they were getting their water from. There would be cattle and dogs and kids playing around in the water and just really contaminated. But then the community would say, you know, there is a supply and it's about, you know, 5 kilometers up in the mountains. And so we would hike up, spend the afternoon hiking up to where their water supply was, and they'd talk about how they were planning on access it, and that's where they would hike every day if they wanted to get the clean water. And then through some of the, as we worked on the projects, we started recognizing the local experts, and we'd get them involved in helping construct it because we had limited amount of time that we could be down there. So we'd have the local experts who had been trained in Panama City, in fact, on water supplies. So he helped us. He'd work with the community and construct a spring box, and then the community itself would dig the trench. You'd lay out a line, and it'd have to obviously follow gravity. It would flow down the side of the hills, and occasionally we'd have to build some extra supports to cross over rivers and things like that. But basically, to get the water, you know, 3 miles or 5 kilometers down from the spring, down into the community, where they would run to a tank. They would construct a tank. They'd haul in the cement, then use the rocks locally. They'd haul in rebar on the backs of mules, and then construct the tank. And then over a course of about a year, they would end up getting a water supply. As Lou mentioned, then they would be able to even run line down into the village from the tank, where they'd actually have a tap stand that then they could get their water supply from. So it's pretty incredible. Celebrations would happen when they would get the water all the way down from the spring box to the tank into the village, you know, a distance of about 5 kilometers. And so I think, in fact, we have a lot of pictures of stuff like that on our website, where we show the village out constructing the water line. And also, interestingly, is they like to do it at night, because as those of us that work 8 to 5, we maybe think that that's the way the world operates, but that's not the way they operate. And if it's cooler at night and there's a moon out, they will be out working all night long building a water line.
Very interesting. Now, you go to, I mean, a place like Panama or wherever, and you help them build a water line like this. It sounds like a lot of them are gravity-fed. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. One of the things we try to do is try to keep it with simple technology. In fact, also interestingly, before I had been on that first trip, I thought we could construct something with a complex pressure-reducing valve. But when I went down there, we found out that they handled a lot of the problems just with called pressure break tanks, where they'd actually just build a tank and they let the water flow in, and they solved the same problem much more simply than we would have done up here. But we learned as well, just going down there to see what really worked for them. In fact, we also ended up replacing a lot of systems that had been installed by other organizations that had installed solar pumps, and they had solar power driven pumps, And they had brought a lot of those materials from the United States. When we went down and we found out you could actually get a lot of that stuff locally. Locally means if they hiked into town, they took a bus another hour, they could get to a city that actually sold the supplies that they needed. Because surprisingly, there are Ace Hardware stores all around the world, and you can actually buy a lot of the materials there. But that doesn't mean they had access to easy access, and nor did they have money to buy it. And that's where we came in. But what they did have was a lot of labor, which they provided.
Labor and some expertise, and also sounds like a lot of creativity.
That's right. The things that work in the real world and maybe we don't think about up here.
So how do you, for example, you build a project like that or you co-build it with the people on the ground in whatever country you're in, be it Bolivia or Panama or Peru or Colombia, Honduras, etc. Then how is it maintained? You guys are there for your vacation. You're doing your work. You're in and out. You do, I think, build relationships, and we can talk about that over a period of years. But then what happens if something breaks? Like, what is the resilience built into the system?
Yeah, well, this brings up a good point. One thing that does we're very much proud of, and it does separate WEFTA and a few other NGOs from the pack, is that we do make it clear that we're with the communities for the long haul. But as you point out, we're not there. We have our jobs up here that we earn our salaries that make it possible to make these trips on a volunteer basis, and so we can't be there. But we do have representatives. I think Elise mentioned it earlier. What we refer to as circuit riders on the ground. So they're local representatives. Many times they're not associated with one of the communities. It could be members of another nonprofit, another NGO. Sometimes it's just an individual.
Is that like a known term, circuit rider?
Yeah. It is here in the world of water, rural water projects here in New Mexico. But what it really refers to is somebody that will be with the community, that will help them organize themselves and then help organize the construction. And then follow up with visits periodically, at least annually,
and have enough technical knowledge to know what it is that is trying to be built there, and then how to construct it using very basic methods.
Now, do they tend to be from that country or from the U.S.?
They're very local.
Okay,
they're all local, but some of them have been fortunate enough earlier in their lives they did get sent away to school, and when they did, they picked up a lot of this education. And then move back to their communities later on.
One thing that's really striking about this work that you do is that you can accomplish so much with very little money. I mean, a project that would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more, here in the United States, even here in New Mexico, can be done extremely cheaply, like in the single or tens of thousands of dollars.
That's right, and even in the construction could be actually fairly difficult, where you would never ask anybody up here to do the kind of work you're asking them to do down there. But nonetheless, they do it by hand, and instead of using a track hoe or something like that, they'll do it by hand, and they'll just keep working at it until they dug the trench or literally move a mountain, because they moved a lot of huge piles of rock to get it out of the way to build a gravity-fed line.
We have projects like a recent project in Miguel Hidalgo deep in the jungles of Chiapas, where it did require quite a bit of concrete, of cement, to be brought in. And these big bags, 80, 90-pound bags of cement, they would carry them from where the road ends on their shoulders several hours through the jungle down to the shore of the river, load these bags of cement in these dugout canoes and bring them up the river to the community. And they would do this time and time and time and time again until they had enough cement in place to combine with the gravel and sand that they collect locally, and then have the materials to build the tanks. It's really impressive what folks go through.
Additionally, they bring rebar. I'm not sure if they brought it there, but Panama, that's what they bring rebar too. on the mules for miles.
They just they shy from nothing. They're just amazingly strong folks, resilient.
Additionally, we also sometimes find locals that are, maybe they're not from the communities, but they're peripheral to the communities, who have expertise as well, and they want to get involved, and they had observed this, the need, and they got involved. And also in the case of Panama, where we had a local solar expert, and he would actually go in and he helped them get set up, and he set up a solar panel system so that then they had power. They could start watching VCRs, so the video training that the local missionaries used for a lot of the healthcare workers, where they were bringing in, they just had videos on sanitary and probably a lot of other videos for the community. I can't remember all of them. But.
We're talking to Water Engineers for the Americas, also known as WEFTA. You guys work here. I mean, Peter is president of Souder Miller, which is an engineering company. How are the problems you're looking at similar to and different from problems that you face as a large engineering company? And how are the solutions similar and different?
Well, that actually very similar situations, which is what our company, one of the things we grew up doing was rural water supply. And it's how we then connected up with the projects Lou needed in WEFTA, and why our same engineers could work on both types of projects, because they both revolve around trying to get a simple workable system in a community. Down there, though, the funding isn't available. You have a lot more available labor, but you don't have access. It's a lot more energy and effort to get the materials there and get the supplies. And the exposure that the community has is a lot greater down there, obviously, the risks.
What do you mean?
Just the in terms of the water supply. Up here, you have ready access to chlorine, the chlorinated systems versus there. And a chlorine system, for example, might need a power supply. But that's something you can't get down there. So instead we looked at either just isolating the water supply itself to make sure that it has plenty of sand and gravel to filter through, or some chlorine tablet systems that we've tried in some places.
So that's a great question. I mean, when you have contaminated water, you don't have ready access to a spring up on top of the hill to do a gravity-fed system. What do you do to clean the water? Is it mostly chlorine or that kind of filtration that you're talking about?
A lot of them, it'll be filtered naturally, and it's filtered naturally, and that's why we do a spring protection system, where we'll fence an area around a water supply or a spring and then keep the animals out, keep a lot of the vegetation surrounding the area in place, but then over-excavate down to where we're trying to get to at a clean water supply. So there'll be more of that basic work, whereas up here maybe you'll just drill a well and tap into an area, and then you can keep the area isolated up here. But down there you'll have to go literally build something to keep it separated from the community.
How do you think about your projects in terms of the larger ecosystem in which these people are living?
One example of that, or probably a good one, and it's a relatively new initiative that we're undergoing right now, is in the Urubamba Valley, where the Urubamba River, you talk to the locals there. I lived in the Urubamba Valley for a couple years while I was working with Habitat for Humanity in Peru. And I just remember having lots of conversations with locals, especially elders, that would talk about their memories of the river when they were children, how they would swim in there, they'd fish and pull out giant trout, just huge fish, and how the river was just this source of clean water and just a lot of joy for the families, for the locals. Now they've basically turned their back on the river. It's just a flowing cesspool. And so we've recognized that there is a role there for WEFTA. So here's an example of where we are working with municipalities up and down the river. There are some villages of size, some 20,000, 25,000 in size, up and down the river. And so we've been, as of a couple years ago, started conversations with local public works personnel in the different villages to help them assess what the different types of wastewater treatment technologies are out there and which might be most appropriate for them, with the goal of course one day cleaning the river. have the trout come back and have the kids be able to swim in it again. It is completely doable, but it's going to take a concerted effort, and it's going to take the know-how that WEFTA brings to the table, where the local engineering staff just don't have the expertise to be able to design effectively these wastewater treatment systems.
There is, however, some local engineering expertise.
Yes, there is. They're quite adept at anything hydraulic calcs and calculations. They can design the wastewater collection systems.
So that basically means just how water is flowing through pipes.
Yeah.
And so we say hydraulic design versus storm water, where it rains a lot, or you have glacier runoff, you have a lot of flow coming through there, and they know how to handle that and divert it and get it running through the down the streets and even in pipes that are buried beneath the ground. So that design they know how to do.
Yep, they're very, very good at it. The trouble is they're very good at designing these systems that concentrate the sewage waste, and it just outlets directly into the river. There is absolutely no treatment at any of these villages along the river. So the river has just gotten to a tipping point. It probably reached the tipping point decades ago. But it's truly a disgusting sight right now, where before this is the sacred valley of the Incas, right? This is a sacred river, and now it's just a source of disgust.
And so fortunately, just because of the flow through the valley itself, the either through glacier melt or just the rains, there's enough flow that over not very long, maybe years, a couple of years, that this should, in fact, clean itself up and reestablish a healthy environment there.
If you get wastewater treatment.
If we could get the wastewater treatment systems in place and get the trash pulled out, and that's right.
Very, very interesting. Now, are the projects that you at WEFTA do, is it all about drinking water and wastewater? Is there also an agricultural piece of it, irrigation, fertilization, things like that?
No, we limit ourselves to development of safe and reliable water sources and proper sanitation. The sanitation isn't always in the form of a wastewater collection systems, but in many cases that's absolutely an inappropriate solution. And in very rural areas with dispersed homes, latrine systems are perfectly adequate. So we have several latrine projects also that we're involved in.
Now, how have your methods changed since this organization started? Were there any kind of like cautionary tales or mistakes that you learned from?
Well, I think Pete touched on one earlier, just when we were talking about, I believe you brought it up, Pete, about the solar-powered pumping systems, or where people with good intentions had come into communities and with the best of intentions and would bring a technology that was really not sustainable. The families have to operate and maintain the systems over the long haul, and if they don't understand them, then they're pretty much doomed to fail. So we truly took it to heart and took it upon ourselves to make sure that the systems we develop and are involved in are going to be sustainable.
Solar seems like it should be sustainable.
Yeah.
What was wrong with it?
Solar panels are a high commodity. What is it? A high-value commodity down there. So if somebody else thinks they need it more than the community, the panels will disappear.
Is that what happened?
They had a lot of problems with the panels. And then they also had the pumps themselves that were used were not acquired from local sources. Instead, they were brought down from the United States, and those as well didn't work.
What did you replace them with?
Surprisingly, they have a Jacuzzi brand pump, the same Jacuzzi pumps you could get up here, you could get at the Ace Hardware store in David, Panama. So they were replaced with pumps that we could get locally. Additionally, another lesson that we learned is there was execution of the projects, where I think earlier pre-WEFTA there were some trips made where you tried to get the whole project constructed on a vacation, and in that case there were a lot of extreme efforts used to get the material in place and to get it built, and then when we showed up a year or two later, the community didn't really had a lot less ownership than they did when it took them a lot longer to build it and they built it themselves. So we saw that happen as well, is that there's honestly no real rush to do this because they've been living this way for quite a while. And so if it takes a while, they're very used to that.
And it seems like if you do it that way where it takes a while, you're building relationships, which are central to basically anything working on this earth.
That's right. And it's so important to us, and I think it's been a key part of our success over the years, is that it is so important that these projects come from the locals, that it is their project. And we come along to help them make it a reality, whether it's in the form of just the technical expertise that our engineers bring in evaluating designs or help creating the designs, but sometimes in the form of finding funding to fill the gap, you know, that's needed to construct the systems.
And I think that was really almost a Habitat for Humanity model that then Lou knew about that, and so he brought along to WEFTA.
Yeah, no, that's been one of the key elements of Habitat for Humanity philosophy forever, yeah, for sure.
Now, are you looking for engineers and hydrologists to volunteer?
Yeah. Also, what we really is exciting is when other people actually bring projects to us as well, because we've had that happen. Lutheran World Relief brought some projects to us from Colombia. But other people might go on a vacation or something like that and see a need and then bring back an idea of where they see something, and they're willing to champion it, and then that requires as well having the community involved. But if they're willing to do that, that's something that we bring then our expertise, not only in the engineering, but in how to execute the project, to find a local NGO possibly that we might find to champion the project locally, but then, you know, work with them on getting the community involved.
But yeah, we definitely feed off that enthusiasm that others bring. When we get, like, John Lincoln's a great example. This is a guy that retired from a large engineering firm called CH2M Hill, with a presence worldwide. He retired and just found us, I think just on the internet, cruising the web, and made a call out of the blue. And this guy is just fantastic. What a great source of energy. He's been very involved in the work that we're involved in the Urubamba Valley. Very passionate person, and brought a lot of enthusiasm and resources and other contacts. And so, of course, we'd love to have a bunch more John Lincolns come along.
We do welcome volunteers to help us, whether or not they're trained as engineers, or, for example, I'm looking for someone to help me with a newsletter to talk about global water issues and specifically WEFTA projects in the field. I'm also hoping to start up a program of outreach to the local school system, so that local classrooms can adopt some of the villages that we work with, adopt a project,
nice,
and learn about those villages and work along with us, following what it takes to bring clean water and proper sanitation to these communities. And hopefully in the process, they'll learn more about how other peoples live. If anyone is interested in learning more about what WEFTA does, or in seeing some of the pictures that we bring back from our projects, on Sunday night, on World Water Day, March 22nd, from 7 until 10 p.m., at the Water Tower in the rail yard, we will be presenting a video installation, which will be providing some information about global water issues and solutions, and telling more about the work we do. So I invite everyone to come down and join us there. Also, you can read about Water Engineers for the Americas at our website, WEFTA, WEFTA.net. That's WEFTA.net. And we also are active on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, which we keep updated almost daily.
Excellent. So WEFTA.net, and we will see you this Sunday, World Water Day. Now, World Water Day in Santa Fe is a big event that I guess is starting out at El Museo Cultural around 4 in the afternoon, and then we'll end up in the rail yard in that big plaza in front of REI where the water tank is. and there'll be a video installation there, and lots of people will be there, and booths and celebrations and music and all kinds of good things. I want to thank all of you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. Peter Fant is an engineer, and he's president and CEO of Souder Miller and Associates, which is an engineering firm, and he's board president of WEFTA, Water Engineers for the Americas. Lou Harrington is a landscape architect and longtime member of WEFTA, and Elise Arena is its executive director. Thank you all so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.